Chapter 14, World War II, Cold War, and Civil Rights. Chapter Preview, People, Matthew J. Perry, Jr., J. Strom Thurmond, Harry S. Truman, J. M. Hinton, Modjeska Monteith Simpkins, J. Wades Waring, John McCrae, George A. Elmore, John Wrighton, Ernest Finney, Isaac Woodard, Jr., Willie Earle, J. A. Delane, L. Marion Gresset, George Bell Timmerman, Jr., Alice Spearman, James McBride Dabbs. Places: Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, Savannah River Site, New Ellington, Batesburg, Somerton, Lake City, Maysville. As a soldier in the United States Army during World War II, Matthew J. Perry, Jr. traveled by train across the South while on military leave. At a train stop in Alabama, he went to a train station restaurant to get a sandwich. African Americans were served only through a window while standing outside. Through the window, Perry could see Italian prisoners of war being served by the waitresses and having a wonderful time. He and his fellow black soldiers in uniform were left standing out in the cold to eat their sandwiches. "You have no idea," he said later, "the feeling of insult that I experienced." Matthew Perry was gathering experiences that would propel him into his career after the war. He grew up in Columbia and spent 2 years at the State College for Blacks at Orangeburg, now South Carolina State University, before going into the military. His Army experiences, both in this country and as a menial worker for other soldiers in France, were humiliating. He learned well the ways of Jim Crow. He began to question what could be done about such an unjust system, and to ask what he could possibly do about it. He decided to finish college and study law as a way to challenge the system. He graduated from the new law school that the state had established at Orangeburg to avoid having to include black students at the all-white university. The South Carolina Conference of NAACP chose him to be its chief lawyer to defend protesters arrested for challenging segregation laws. He often lost the cases at the trial level in South Carolina, but he always won against segregation if he could get the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. He and his fellow NAACP lawyers played a major role in removing discrimination laws in the state. All the while, Perry earned the respect and admiration even of his opponents. In the 1970s, the longtime segregationist Senator J. Strom Thurmond recommended Perry as a judge on the U.S. Court of Military Appeals, and President Gerald Ford appointed him. 4 years later, President Jimmy Carter appointed him to the U.S. District Court in South Carolina. Perry remained in that position for the rest of his life, treating all people in his court, the accused, the lawyers, the law officers, the reporters, with unfailing courtesy, respect, and fairness. He died in 2011 after a full day of work at the Columbia Courthouse named in his honor. 6 days later, on what would have been his 90th birthday, he was scheduled to meet President Barack Obama in the White House. Matthew Perry's life is a testament to the changes that have taken place in South Carolina and America since World War II. His determination to keep working to the end shows he realized the change was not yet fully achieved. Section 1, World War II. As you read, look for events leading up to America's participation in World War II. Efforts on the home front that helped win the war. Dramatic changes in our nation's economy. Social changes, including population shifts and expanding roles for women, but continued injustice for minorities. Terms: Axis powers, Allied powers, ration, Lend-Lease Act. Woodrow Wilson had declared World War I the war to end all wars, but he predicted another world war within a generation if America and other nations did not organize for peace. Like war, peace required planning. Wilson wanted countries to create a League of Nations to resolve disputes before they led to war. A League of a Few Nations was formed, but it failed to prevent wars, including World War II. Instead, in the 1920s and 1930s, America tried to isolate herself and did little to help solve international conflicts. Europe goes to war. Most major nations experienced their own versions of America's Great Depression. In the midst of economic turmoil, the people of Italy, Germany, and Japan turned to extreme nationalist parties that promised prosperity and national greatness through an aggressive foreign policy. Italy expanded into parts of Africa. Japan took over large parts of China and the East Indies. Germany absorbed Austria and Czechoslovakia. Other nations could do little but protest, make threats, and prepare their own defense. World War II began in September 1939 when Chancellor Adolf Hitler's Germany invaded Poland. Britain and France declared war on Germany. After defeating Poland, Hitler took over most of Western Europe and began to bomb the British Isles. Italy and Japan joined with Germany in an alliance called the Axis Powers. In response, Britain, France, Canada, Australia, and eventually the United States, the Soviet Union, China, and some 60 other countries joined forces and were called the Allied Powers. Response of the United States. The outbreak of war in Europe tested the American policy of isolation. The United States, with President Franklin D. Roosevelt's leadership, slowly became convinced that we must support Britain's efforts to prevent a German takeover of Europe and a Japanese takeover of Asia. Congress enacted the first peacetime draft. American industry swung into action. When Britain could no longer pay for supplies, Congress passed the Lend-Lease Act with the skillful guidance of Senator James F. Burns. This Lend-Lease Act allowed the United States, in effect, to give to Britain all the arms and ammunition, planes and tanks that we could send them. The supplies helped Britain survive, but German sinking of our supply ships brought the United States to the brink of war. America enters the war. America entered World War II over 2 years after it started, but not because of ships sunk by Germans. We entered because of the surprise Japanese attack on the American Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, on December 7, 1941. Japan saw American naval power in the Pacific as a challenge to her ambition to dominate East Asia. The attack aroused Americans to the challenge of Japan, Germany, and Italy. Now the nation was stirred up and patriotic sentiment overflowed. Soon, Americans were fighting in Europe, Africa, and Asia, and on Pacific islands. The U.S. Navy was deployed around the world. The Army Air Corps became crucial, bombing military bases and enemy encampments, and even destroying cities in enemy countries. World War II became the most destructive war in human history because of the new technology, which included, before the end, nuclear weapons. For America, the war was the most costly in human lives in our history, with the exception of the Civil War. The home front. The 15 million Americans who served in the armed forces during the war have been justly praised for their courage, sacrifice, and achievements. But the war could not have been won without the 60 million workers in industry and agriculture who performed miracles of production. Automobile assembly lines shifted to the production of tanks, trucks, and airplanes. The United States turned out twice as much as Germany and Japan combined. Crucial to this phenomenal feat was James F. Burns. Roosevelt had appointed Senator Burns to the U.S. Supreme Court in 1941, but in 1942 asked him to resign from the court and become the chief official in charge of war mobilization. His power was such that he was often called the Assistant President. The Wartime Economy. Wartime production greatly decreased unemployment. The Great Depression was over. There were now labor shortages. Instead of inexpensive goods but little money, people now had money, but civilian goods were scarce and expensive. Government adopted rationing to make sure everyone could get at least a small amount of scarce items. To ration is to control the amount of a product people are allowed to have. Local ration boards distributed books with ration stamps that had to be presented along with money to buy such items as meat, sugar, coffee, shoes, tires, and gasoline. The ration boards allotted the average family car less than 2 gallons of gas per week. The war brought heartache and grief, but also affluence. The enormous federal spending penetrated the American economy. All classes in South Carolina and the nation felt the prosperity. Farmers' income quadrupled. The lowest paid 20% of workers increased their share of the nation's income. The richest people did well, but their share increased less rapidly, owing to heavy wartime taxes. Half the war expenses were paid by taxes, and half by borrowing, selling savings bonds to citizens. Wartime savings mushroomed. At the end of the war, people were ready to spend those savings. Social changes. The war stimulated shifts in population. The rural to urban shift increased. Severe housing shortages occurred in cities and around the new military bases. The rural population declined by 20% with the wartime shifts. During the war, families experienced major changes. First, women entered the paid workforce in jobs not usually considered women's work. Metalwork, riveting, welding, tending blast furnaces, and assembling jeeps, trucks, and planes. Women enlisted in the armed services in non-combat roles. After the war, the return of prosperity contributed to a rise in the marriage rate. More couples could afford to get married. When men were ordered overseas, couples often rushed into marriage. The divorce rate shot up along with the marriage rate, but not in South Carolina, the only state where divorce was still banned by state law. Higher wages led to improvements in health. People were able to visit doctors and dentists. Also, the 16 million men and women in uniform had health care for themselves and their dependents. More doctors were being trained. These health improvements were not as great in South Carolina, where the infant and maternal death rate was still very high. Race and war. Nearly 1 million African Americans served in the Army or Navy during the war. Most soldiers were not in combat units, but, like Matthew Perry, were sent off to service outfits doing construction and bringing up supplies to the front lines. However, in combat conditions, all troops had assignments for handling ammunition and manning artillery. At the insistence of the NAACP, the Army Air Corps, later the U.S. Air Force, created a segregated unit of African American flyers known as the Tuskegee Airmen. They proved to skeptical whites that blacks could be capable pilots and crews on combat missions. It is little known that many of the Tuskegee Airmen received their advanced combat training at the Walterboro Army Airfield before being sent into combat. At home, blacks still faced discrimination in jobs and housing in both the North and the South. Shortages of workers gave blacks more opportunities and higher wages than before, but not to the extent of whites. Hispanics and Asians suffered many of the same injustices. Roosevelt, under pressure from Northern black labor leaders, agreed to create a Fair Employment Practices Commission, FEPC, in 1941. The FEPC helped significantly in government hiring, but was not very effective with private corporations. The great migration of African Americans that continued during the war made black-white relations not just a Southern problem. Sadly, race riots in several northern cities showed relations were not good all across the United States. Do you remember? 1. define in sentence form, Axis Powers, Ration, Lend-Lease Act. 2. What was the event that pushed the United States into World War II? 3. What South Carolinian became the chief U.S. official in charge of war mobilization? 4.